All right. Hey, it's Bromo here. Time change. Hopefully you've successfully moved on with that. Moved all your clocks ahead, even though nowadays we don't really even have any clocks around the house. It's all digitally done for us. This is my 25th podcast, if you can believe it or not. It's called There Is a Way Out. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2-17-09. I'm not an expert by any means. I do this for many reasons. One, I hope that people can listen to the stories of others that I have on. That's the strength of my podcast, not me. People who have their strength and hope, and they can share what they've gone through. And maybe if you have anybody, including yourself or family member or friend or anyone that you know that might be on the edge or is suffering from addiction, that they can listen to this and they can gather what I have to offer and what my guests have to offer and see if they can go from there. And again, I'm extremely proud of this. If anybody out there wants to join my There Is a Way Out Facebook group page, please send me an invite. We have quite a bit of people on there. And a lot of people that are on this group are not necessarily addicts or alcoholics at all. They just want to support people and feel good about this page. Again, it's called There Is a Way Out. Just send me an invite through Facebook. And this episode, I'm speaking to a guy named Tom Dyvad, who lives in San Diego. I've never met him personally, but he and I have stayed in contact. I've been grateful enough to have his suggestions and his comments, and he listens to my podcast. He's followed me when I was in Minot years ago. And Tom, how's it going today? How's the weather out there?
Oh, it's 72 and sunny.
Oh, isn't that
terrible weather, but somebody's got to live here.
Yes. Yeah. And you pulled the short straw, didn't you?
Yeah, darn it. Well.
72 and sunny San Diego. Now tell a little bit about yourself. Are you a native San Diegan?
No, I'm from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I was in the Navy out here. I got out after 12 years in the submarine force.
So wait. You served time in a submarine. My deep most respect goes out to you. I could not do that. Thank you for your service. You were actually in the submarine business.
I was a quartermaster on the submarine service. Oh. I was also a Vietnam era veteran.
Oh, claustrophobic fans will not relate to submarines. Boy, I couldn't do a minute down there. Okay, continue. Sorry about that, Tom. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. I'm a Vietnam era veteran. I spent some time there, 3 months, as a matter of fact. I got out of there alive, and 59,000 didn't. So
yeah.
I graduated in 1968 from Linmar High School. I never drank or did nothing. I mean, we had beer that my dad made or whatever. I mean, we had a little bit at home, but I never drank. I tried to stay away from that, and then I got out of high school and started running with the crowd. And my mom and dad both drank considerably. So did my brother.
I'm gonna stop you real quick, and I do this a lot, so pardon my rudeness. When you were in high school, if you were like me, did you see any other drug around? I saw pot occasionally, and that's it.
Pot. Back in the, It was just pot. And,
sure.
And I didn't see very much of that there. It was a sports high school, so
yeah.
I didn't get into any of that. So.
So your parents drank a little bit or moderately?
Moderately to excessively.
Yeah.
They both passed away from cancer, so maybe that was part of it.
I'm sorry about that.
My brother drank exceptionally long after his son died. His son died of cancer. He just passed away in 2003.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I got to see him before he passed away. That was good.
Yep.
I didn't start drinking. I started drinking out of high school, running with the crowd and being what it was back then, it was no big deal.
Yeah.
And I went into the service. I went into the Navy and went to submarine school, went to Guam, And I started drinking there. We drank a lot when I was in submarine school, and I just kept on drinking, but it didn't seem to be a problem.
So you worked around it, basically. You went to work, you drank, off work, whenever.
Yes, sir, I did. I did that. I never drank on work, never did that. I started smoking pot, and I was using cross stops, amphetamines.
Okay.
I'm an amphetamine abuser. That's what I did.
What was the longest stint you spent underwater in a submarine, if you can remember?
Probably 75 days.
Oh, God.
Almost 80.
Oh, God. Oh.
I got to tell you, Bromo, you're on there with the smartest people in the Navy.
Oh, I'm sure.
They're most intelligent people. If you ain't smart enough to qualify, they send them out of there. They don't want you on there because any mistake can cause the life of 150 people. So
that's how many people at most that you were in a submarine with, about 150 people?
Well, yeah, it's 139, 140 people, depending on if we had riders on there.
Yeah.
On ballistic missile submarines, and then I was on fast attacks, too. And that range is from 82 to 92 or something like that.
Now, do they put you through training as far as mental training by being underwater, not seeing the sunlight? There's got to be some kind of mental strength you guys go through. Has to be.
Well, in submarine school, you're doing a bunch of tests. You go to the ascent school. It's a big tank with water in it, and they put you in at 50 feet, and you do a free ascent from there. Now, that's a test to you to be in claustrophobic. First of all, if you're claustrophobic, you have no business even applying for some. It's all volunteer service. They don't throw you in there. It's all volunteer.
Right.
So they do it from 50 feet up, and you go do a free ascent, doing the ho-ho-ho and all that.
And what age are you at this point? What age?
21.
Okay.
I went in late. The judge made me an offer I couldn't refuse. So.
The judge? You got a little bit of trouble, you think?
A little bit. A little bit of trouble.
Okay.
A little bit of trouble.
So you got that sorted out?
Things when you're
young. Oh, yeah, we all do. Yeah. Sure. You got that sorted out? You were given an option? You took it? You went into submarine school?
Yeah, I went to the Navy, and then I went to submarine school in Groton, Connecticut, and I came out of there, and I went to Guam to be on a submarine, and from there I went to Vietnam. Unfortunately, they put me on a river patrol boat.
Oh,
and, that's right. Somebody had to do it. Apparently, it was not the best. I kind of like took that out of my life. I just forgot that I was living there. It's just easier to do it that way.
How? I got to ask you just some straight up questions. Do you mind when it comes to things like that?
Oh, no problem.
You know, they portray it in the movies and such, and you've seen the movies, but they can't even do anything close to what that must have been like for you to experience that. Am I right?
No, you can't put it on a film. It just doesn't. And there are several movies that are close, I guess. But
sure.
I was fortunate. I was only there for 3 months. I know people that are still over there. They're here, but they're still over there. And I'm kind of one of them.
Sure.
Most of them, I have PTSD. So you have to do what you got to do. I mean, there's nothing. Once you're over there, there ain't nothing to do about it. You can't cry about it. You're there.
Of course.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
If you don't mind, if you don't mind, real quick, explain to the people that are listening who have heard what PTSD is. Explain to people what that is for you.
For me, I couldn't sleep. I'm not scared of anything. I just am not.
I wouldn't think so.
Anyway, you can't sleep. I became claustrophobic during not only from being there, but being on submarines. After something happened on one of my submarines that I was off of, I lost. They lost the Bonefish, caught on fire, and I lost three people.
Yeah.
I was on the Bonefish, and I knew exactly what those three people were doing when they died.
Yeah.
Exactly. I done the same thing with them. So, to me, that set me over the edge of the PTSD. I didn't know I had PTSD. I covered it up with alcohol and drugs. It was just easier to do it that way than to admit it.
So those people who use alcohol and drugs and have used it for quite a while can kind of relate to what you just said a couple seconds ago about PTSD. They are masking what they have with alcohol and drugs.
Without a doubt. In the kind of revert to another thing here, in the service, I did some alcohol and drug abuse training. I was one of those people that did it.
I mean,
I was helping people out, but I was masking it with my own.
Yeah.
They put me in alcohol abuse school, so I would hopefully quit. And I did for a while, but as any people that are listening, you quit 100 times, but you only quit once for good. So
yeah,
you just do it. It's there's always an excuse. Always an excuse to start again, or well, the Yankees won, the Yankees lost, or whatever. And it's just there's always something to draw you back into it.
Oh yeah,
it's a terrible disease.
And that I'm sure, Tom, a lot of us that are in recovery can completely 100% understand what you just said, without a doubt.
Oh, it's I did it. Even when I was a court team, my first wife and I, we had a baby who was born with cancer.
Oh.
And she's still alive. She has big drug problems. As my first wife, she's dying from cancer right now. It is part of life. I mean, God takes you. You don't have a chance. You don't have a chance to argue with him. It's your number, and that's it.
Right.
Anyway, we got divorced because she wanted to use drugs, and then I got used to using drugs, so it just became part of my life. And I was trying to figure out. For everybody, don't ever try to figure out what other people think, why they did this and why they did that, because you're never going to find out. It's just not going to happen, and you just draw yourself into nothingness.
Yeah, that is true.
I was at the nothingness. I was using crystal and smoking pot. And, oh Lord, I was doing everything. And
did you know at the time that your life was spinning erratically out of control?
Yeah, at work, I turned myself into. An alcohol abuse place because it was just time. It was time. And then I met my wife that I have now. We've been married for 35 years. Coincidentally, that's how long I've been sober. My sober date is July 17th, 1988.
Oh, you got one coming up fairly soon. Now tell everybody how great that day is real quick. Is that your favorite day of the year?
Yeah, well, yeah, that and a month and a half before that is my wedding date,
so sure.
My anniversary. So yeah, that's a good date.
Well, I can't relate to that because yeah. I've never been married, not even close. so
yeah, yeah. Well, I fortunately found a really good woman. So this time she's a good lady. She understands. She took her a while to understand PTSD.
Yeah.
Took my kids a while to understand it, but they're understanding it. That sometimes there's sometimes when you have PTSD, you want to be alone, just stay away from him. And just the best thing to do is just to stay away from me. And
right.
And she understands that, and she leaves me alone, and she takes care of me and feeds me and everything else. And I've had 32 operations on my body, so that's life going on. So.
Why don't you tell a little bit about that? What kind of what have you been going through recently? You told me through Facebook messages that you've had some
I have bladder cancer, complements of Agent Orange. I am twice cleared of cancer. I'm cancer free twice, so I still take chemo. That's three of the operations. God's good. He brought me through that. So And I'm not really a religious person. I believe, and that's what I do.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a great feeling when that happened. I felt really good. I felt really good about life because you just with cancer in my family, you just never know.
Yeah. So, right.
So it was a good deal. I've had both knees, both hips replaced. I've had 9 eye operations, 7 operations on my left ankle, 4 back operations. They fused my back. They fused my neck. It is what it is. I mean, I go to the VA and Veterans Administration Hospital. When I first went there, I was feeling so sorry for myself. My back was hurting so bad I couldn't stand up hardly.
Right.
I was walking in there, and there's 6 or 7 guys that were arms and legs were gone from Afghanistan and Iraq. And they're laughing and joking, and I'm bitching about my back. And that kind of put a reality into my what a concept that is.
Yeah.
So I go there, and I'm 74 years old. I feel better when I come out of there because I know that I'm being taken care of good. We're excellent people here in San Diego, VA, excellent. And you just have to accept what's given you and try not to let it affect you. I mean, I'm pretty strong in the fact I quit alcohol, drugs, and smoking all in the same day.
Oh, God.
I haven't touched any of it since.
Well, smoking is one of the most difficult things to give up.
I did patches for that. But other than that, I quit cold turkey. I just stopped.
Explain to everybody real quick and to myself real quick, Tom. What is Agent Orange? That's what you said.
Agent Orange was sprayed in Vietnam to kill vegetation.
Okay.
To get us a better handle on handling what they were doing, because that's their country. They know every bit of it.
Wow.
They also sprayed Guam with it to help them. We didn't even know about that. So I've lost several friends from it. You can tell it causes cancer. It causes many types of cancer. It causes lots of other, and people are dying from every day. They're losing every day.
Right.
That's part of what I said. We lost 58,475 people over in Vietnam, and we're losing people every day because some people never left. I mean, they left, but they didn't leave. You know, they burned. They're here, but they're still there. You can tell if you go to a fair and you hear a pop or a backfire of a car, some of them go to the ground.
Yeah.
That's what they did. And those guys were over there for months and months and months and years. And I was there for 3 months, so I can't say much about me. I did what I was told to do, and nothing. I couldn't do anything else. So.
Well, I have to ask you this. When you were in Vietnam, and of course you see it in the movies and stuff like that, did you see a lot of drugs or drinking or smoking pot or anything like that?
I know it was there. I didn't see any. I didn't do anything over there. Where we were stationed, you had to be aware of everything going around you. You can't be high over there. So.
Oh, of course.
I'm sure everybody was, and there was it was a big problem over there. For me, I didn't see it. I wasn't there long enough. I kind of stayed away from everybody else. I tried to anyway.
Yeah.
So,
It was an
experience, that's for sure.
So you've been sober for how many years now? What'd you say, 30?
35. It'll be 36 years in July.
Did you have any, when you first began to attempt become sober, did you have any relapses?
From the 35? No.
No, before that. Before you had.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, did you try and quit?
I quit 100 times.
100 times.
Yeah, I quit a lot.
This is what I want people to hear, and I want everyone to hear your whole story, but I want to hear what it's like when you remember the times you relapsed. Were you just not done yet, and you said, let's give it another try?
Yeah, you think, okay, I'm done, because you wake up with a hangover or dry mouth so bad from crystal that you can't see.
Yeah.
That you oh God, I'm never going to do it. And then a friend comes over and whatever, and they, oh, well, I have a beer. I say, okay, well, I have one. Well, then you just relapse and you're got to start all over again.
You've heard the stories you've heard me say, and it's true. When you are sober for a while and your mind says, I can try one beer, you just can't, can you?
No, you can't. Your mind and your heart and your soul, all three have to get together and say, this is it. This is done. I'm done. And at that point, you have to decide who's your friends and who's not. And the ones that are keep saying, well, you could try one, you dislodge them and tell them to go away. You have to. There's nothing else you can do.
Right.
Because they'll always be there saying, oh, come on, Tom, you can just do one more line. And I can't. No, I can't. Crystal was the hardest thing for me to quit. I could quit alcohol. Crystal meth was terrible. It was terrible for me to quit. I loved it. I enjoyed the fact of being high off of it. But when your wife says, I'm going to leave with the baby, when my second wife was going to have a baby soon, and as a matter of fact, we had it in July. I mean, they had it in January of that year. Of 88, and so it was six months. No, see, she was born in 89. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
She was born in 89, and so she said that the baby, she was pregnant. She says, "I'm gonna leave if you don't stop." And to me, that was that pushed you over into the other side of the you. When you're trying to quit, you go down to you. And at some point when you cross over and you start back up again, the other side of you, then that's your point of no return, shall we say.
Right.
So you start going up. So you start going up there. And I got to the top there. I have no inclination to drinking again. And I surely don't want to. I can tell a meth user a mile away. I can just tell I did it for 20 years. So.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Fortunately, I have no retina damage. I have no heart damage. I got new teeth, so that's a good deal. But other than that, I was very lucky. Very lucky not to service any retinal or heart or lung damage from that. I didn't smoke and I snorted it, so my sinuses are good. But people have to know that you've got to come to a point where you have to quit. There's nothing else you can do, either that or you die.
Well, this is what I want to ask you. When you got to that point and you said to yourself, and you did a big soul searching thing, and you said, hey, did you go somewhere? Did you go somewhere and get treated?
No. Nope.
What was your step?
Cold turkey. I stopped all three cold turkey.
Let's talk about that. Cold turkey. Now, that's not something I would, and you don't mind me saying this, Tom, because not everyone clearly is as strong as you. And I'm not one to throw out the playbook on what you have to do to stay sober. But man, you agree with me when I say that the odds on doing it cold turkey are not in your favor. Wouldn't you think? I mean, a lot of people try cold turkey. They don't last but a day and a half.
No, I asked an agency over here what was the odds of a person quitting alcohol, drugs, and smoking all in the same day and never going back cold turkey, and they said it was 0.4%.
So, I would guess.
That's one of the things I'm proud of. Other than my kids and my wife and my sobriety, is that I did it without anybody's help. I mean, I had help. I went to AA meetings and for a while, and then those became my drugs, so I quit them. And not that was just me. If somebody go to them four times a day, God bless them. That's great. If they still go to them after 20 years, if that's what keeps them sober, do it.
Well, explain real quick when you meant, you said, those became my drugs. You meant that you felt like you didn't want to get addicted to having to have to go to meetings?
Well, yeah, it was like you go to the meetings, and I even tried different meetings, but you're hearing the same things over and over and over again. And to me, for the alcohol, I drank alcohol because it was easy when you're using meth. I mean, your meth burns up the alcohol in your system, so I can drink 12 pack and I even be drunk.
So it's like water, right? You're just drinking it like water.
I drink it water. Yep.
Yep.
So it's like every person is different. Some people can quit 10 times, and then maybe the final time they say, well, I'm going to do it this time. And if they do it, and once you fall back, go back again, start over again.
Yeah, I want you to say that again for those who have relapsed. Say that again.
If you have a relapse, it's no big deal. Just start over again. Don't think your life's over with. It's not. Just start all over again. It's you got to start sometime. I quit lots of times.
You know what, though, Tom? I hate to tell you, Tom, but unfortunately, and you know this, and I've experienced it, for some people, that was what pushed them over the edge, and they took their life. Because of,
most definitely,
you know, and it's
without question, bro, without question.
It's shocking too when it happens, because you look at that story, you look at that person and go, damn, why did you do that? You know,
I have a personal experience with that. My nephew, my sister adopted twins. My nephew, he was drinking really bad. He lost his job at ITT, and he was doing really well. Very smart man. Both of them very smart.
Yeah.
But he drank himself. I tried to get him to come here. He was thinking about it, and a month later, they found him in his apartment dead. He died of drugs or alcohol. I mean,
yeah.
And my brother did the same thing. My brother drank and drank and drank. Lost his marriage and everything else for it because of his son. He let my nephew died of Hodgkin's disease.
Okay.
And so he died of cancer, and it just tore my brother up. And I talked to him about it. It's trying to figure out why. And you can't answer that. There's nobody can answer that question. Why? Only one answer to that's the Lord. He needed somebody to be with him, apparently. So
it's just so tragic. It's just so mind-boggling tragic when that person's state of mind has given up by relapsing, but then given the ultimate given up and says, "There's no other thing that I can do but take my life." And it just destroys everybody around them, their family members, of course, their friends.
It takes a piece of every bit of the family and friends and loved ones away. It just takes a piece of them away. It
sure does.
I have friends that were going to quit and everything else. Veterans. There's veterans that there's 22 to 23 veterans lose their life every day to suicide. God. And it's because of drugs or PTSD or whatever it is. Mostly PTSD or drugs or alcohol, it's all combined, and they lose their life every day. They take their lives every day. I have a thing I wear a lot on my wrist that says 22 die every day, and it's sad. I've never gone that deep. I've been into depression before. I get it every once in a while. It's part of PTSD, but Never to the point of, well, screw it, I'm done with this. Heck with this, I'm done with it.
You know what, I can tell by just talking to you on the phone now for the last half hour or so, and like I said, we've never met before, but I can tell you're the kind of guy who's not going to walk around waving a, hey, I've been sober for how many years, or any kind of T-shirt that says, look at me, I've done it for this amount of years. You celebrate your sobriety birthday with calm and with pride, but have you, I'm sure people know of your sobriety. Have you had anybody that has ever come up to you and said, Tom, I got a friend or I got a neighbor or even myself that's going through it bad. What do you recommend? What do you tell them?
I tell them that they need to get a. I tell them what, you know, I get a little information from them, or if I know them, I say, well, then get, tell those people that are helping you get drunk, don't go away. But second of all, you have to get all three of your soul, your mind, and your heart together and say, that's it, I'm done.
Right.
But most of all, you have to want to. If you don't want to, then you're not going to. It's just that simple.
Yeah, that's the underlining thing. That's what everyone, you know. Go ahead.
I am so proud of myself that I did this because it was, like I said, the crystal was terrible. I tried and tried for that, and it was just easier to stay high. Once you start coming down, it's easier to go back up to a little level. And I'm fortunate I didn't get thrown in jail. I used to deal it and everything else. And I was like, you know, this is really stupid. And once you get sober long enough that your mind and your heart's clear and your soul's clear, you can look back going, Jesus,
you're okay.
How stupid was that of me to do that?
Well,
you know,
that's,
you look at that, but that shouldn't be a thing of going, well, God dang, gosh darn it, I did this. And then some people go back on it and they go, oh, well, I can start again now, but you can't. Once you quit, you can't start again. You can't have an ounce of beer. You can't have nothing.
Why? Just Why quit. Is that, Tom?
Because you just relapse. You just got to start over again.
It's because your body is craving it. And like the book says,
and
you agree with this. Like the book says, you can be 37 years sober or 40 years sober, and you can go out and think to yourself, you know what? I'm going to dabble a little bit. And for me, it's non-alcoholic beer or anything like that. I'm going to dabble a little bit. Why not? We're at this celebration. Let me try a beer. Once that motion is underway, 2 days later, 3 days later, maybe a month later, they're back to where they were 37 years ago.
Without question, bro. Without question, I every once in a while I have a Budweiser non-alcoholic. Every once in a while, not very often. Other than that, I've never even come close. I have that. It's a taste of beer, no alcohol in it. I'm good.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not right, but that's I'm happy with that. That's. As far as I ever want to go, I've seen people. I see people at the baseball games and the football games drunk on their butt, and they're acting completely idiots.
Oh, I know, right?
I can do that all myself without the alcohol. I don't need alcohol.
Right. Right. So, you know my podcast by now, and you've heard my episodes, and you know my line of thinking, and you know that I don't ever try to tell anyone, hey, you're not doing it right, or hey, this guy is.
Oh, no.
So, but for me, though, the logical feeling in my head is, man, don't tempt yourself with any dulling your senses at all. Like, I'm an alcoholic, truly. But if someone were to offer me a drag on a marijuana cigarette, I'm not going to smoke it because I know that could completely dull my senses.
Yeah, it's just another way of getting high.
Another way of getting high, right?
I've spoke when I was on the East Coast, not out of the Navy, but I was at the shipyard in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I went and talked to some of the freshman class of the University of New Hampshire, and talked to them about drugs and alcohol. Then I've been to high schools. I've been to elementary school before. I talk to kids about it. I said, don't do any drugs. They're stupid. It's just really silly.
Yeah.
But you can't tell somebody how to do it. They got to figure their own way out.
I mean,
you can give them pointers. You can tell them, you know, I did this, but maybe that's not good for you. On my Facebook page or even on your page, I put my phone number down. So if you ever need anybody to talk to, I'm here.
Yeah, let me explain something to everybody real quick, Tom, if you don't mind me saying this.
Sure.
This is what I love about Tom so much, is on my There Is a Way Out group page on Facebook, sometimes when somebody says something, I have to approve it. And the reason why I've got that is because for the longest time, these idiots were getting by trying to send porn in, or they're trying to sell shoes. And so I have to approve every message that's sent. So as soon as somebody reaches out and says, hey, man, I'm hurting, I approve it. I get a hold of them personally, and I said, do you mind if I write something real quick up saying, hey, this person sure could use a hug, or sure could use a support? You're one of the first people that respond immediately with some great hugging advice, I like to say, or hugging support. Like, hey, I'm here. You need to talk. I'm here. That's truly what someone in recovery does for somebody else. I wanted everyone to hear that, because you're great at doing that.
To me, it's part of being sober, or straight, or however straight and sober, or wherever you want to put it, is part of being that way. I gave you the idea to become straight and sober, so in reality, you should be helping somebody else. In this world today, it's so screwed up that the world's, you've got to be, and it's not a political thing, you just got to help people.
Yeah.
You just got to help people. I've helped people with PTSD before.
Yeah.
I have friends that have PTSD, and I talk to them, and they talk to me. When I was going sober in AA meetings, I did have numbers in my wallet. I got lost. So I don't have those numbers, but I had them for years in my wallet, so that if I ever thought about going back, I had that number. I could call Jose or wherever, whoever.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Call them and say, hey, I need help.
And the thing about you is you don't have that attitude of, hey, I've got to do this. I've got to say this. I got to do this now. No, your attitude is, I humbly do this because I genuinely care about somebody's recovery. And do you know how valuable that is? You know that, don't you?
Yes, sir.
You do. And this is one of the things I'm so proud about this page and this podcast, not because my goofy voice or anything like that, but I'm able to put people like you on and other guests that are able to spread the word and tell people, yeah, there is a way out. Absolutely there is.
Yeah, don't ever stop trying. If you go back 10 times, try the 11th. It's just once you get your mind clear of all the alcohol and stuff and the wants and stuff, you realize, dang, this is the best I've ever felt.
Yeah.
It is. It's an amazing feeling. When I was on submarines, a lot of people were using drugs to get qualified on submarines. Qualifying on submarines, difficult.
Oh, bet.
Best is difficult. You have to know every valve, every electrical system, how to draw it. You have to know how it works. If I walk by a motor generator and the guy passed out and he's dying, then I need to take care of the generator or whatever it is. So you need to know all that. You need to know how to do it now. Not think about it and look it up in the book. You don't have that time.
Yeah.
So I'm proud I qualified in 7 weeks, and normally it takes a year or so. So they don't put stupid people on there, but apparently they made an exception for me. So
oh, they did not.
Anyway, I was proud. I was proud of that, but that leads to the fact that you never quit. You just never quit. You can't quit.
How wonderful is it that you are in control of your life, and you've been so for so many years?
It's amazing. I have people, my friends that are good quality friends, they can ask me to a bar, but they know I'm not going to drink.
Right.
I mean, they don't even offer it. Nobody offers it to me anymore. I mean, if they do, I say, no thanks. I don't drink anymore. And that's good. And when you say that, inside, your insides jumping up and down and going, yeah, baby, I did this. Yeah. As you just say, have I told people that I'm straight and sober? You betcha. I told kids that I was straight and sober. I kind of steer away from it in the soccer kids. I've coached girls soccer for 27 years. And I've never played soccer before in my life. I'm from the Midwest. You didn't have it in the 60s, so... So anyway, it's just help. It's like I've taught the kids in school here. And I go in there with the fact that I'm here on my time. If you don't want to listen to me, Luke.
Well, let me ask you this real quick. Take a second to answer, and then I'll explain why I asked you the question, and then you'll understand. Have you ever been, and are you embarrassed by your sobriety?
Oh, many times embarrassed. You ask, oh, hey, did you have a good time? Yeah, I had a great time. That's embarrassment. Like, you can't even remember what you did?
No, I mean, as your state of mind now, as your sobriety date, your journey now, have you ever, when you first started out on your journey and where you're at now, have you ever been, are you embarrassed now of your sobriety?
Oh, never.
See? No, and the reason why I asked you that, Tom, is because a lot of times, and you had just mentioned a little earlier, we can be out and about, and somebody who doesn't know our history will say, hey, Broma, you want a beer? And then when I say to them, I don't drink anymore. All right. It's now up to me whether I want to say I'm an alcoholic. I usually do. I say I don't drink anymore. I'm 15 years sober. I'm proud of that. Sometimes they recoil. They'll coil back and go, oh, God, I'm sorry. And they might look at you kind of funny, like your head's going to explode. And I say, hey, you got nothing to be sorry about. Hey, you don't have anything to be sorry about just asking me to have a beer. That's just polite. And you don't have to be uncomfortable around me at all. I'm not going to relapse because you're having a beer. Have another one if you want. I'm glad you said that because you feel the same way I do, don't you?
Oh, most definitely. I'm proud of the fact that I quit. I'm proud of it, and I'll tell anybody I'm proud of it. I don't care. I tell it all the time to people. You know, I tell them, I said, no, I maybe go overboard sometimes and tell too many people. My kids don't like to go to school with me because I know so many people for driving a steel truck for 27 years and coaching and being around town that I just know a lot of people. And anyway, they know me, so they know that I don't do that. So most of them don't ask me. And I don't go out a lot. If I go out, it's with my wife. She doesn't drink at all.
Yeah.
So that helps. Several of my friends have come to Jesus moment, shall we say, and they got DUIs, and it cost them $15,000-$20,000. So,
and some people
monetarily,
some people it's cost them lives. Them, you know? With some situations, yep. It's cost people lives where they've gone out and killed somebody or a family member.
Yep, that's fact. That's a fact. You drive drunk. I think of all times I drove drunk, and I'm going, gee, somebody's watching over me because you know what. There's no way I could have not killed somebody. I've had friends that were in car accidents that are dead because they were drinking and driving or high and driving. So I got my first DUI and I never drove drunk again. So,
that's awesome. I want to say this real quick. We're going to wrap this up in a couple of minutes, but I want to say this real quick. I've had, let's see. When I lived in Minot and I had 30 podcasts over there, and now this is my 25th, I've had several different stories from several ways of people that have quit, stayed sober, and are living their life and their journey to the fullest. There are several ways. You might have a purist that might listen to any of my podcasts and criticize me for not going through all the steps that are in the book. And I get it. I get it. That is a way to stay sober. That is a way to get a sponsor and all that. I get that. But everybody, when it works for them, man, don't mess with it. Like, I'm not going to mess with Tom and say, Tom, after you and I have talked about 40 minutes now, you quit cold turkey? That's not how it works. I'm not going to do that with anybody. Your way is a way of mental strength. Your way is telling everybody, hey, you can do this. Don't ever stop trying. You can't quit.
That's true. You can't. Like I said, AA meeting. If you want to go to 10 meetings a day and that keeps you sober, do it.
Do it.
Do whatever you need to do to keep yourself sober. Because at some point in your life, you're going to say, "Gee, I should have done it this way." But that's the wrong way of doing it. Also, you can't look. You can't change what's already happened.
Right.
And you can't change. You can only change what's going to happen in your sobriety, and you can change today. That's the only thing you can.
You can change today. That is so true.
Yep.
I love it, Tom. You're awesome. You're awesome. Congratulations on your sobriety. coming up on July and your marriage and all of that. You have anything?
I appreciate it.
You have anything you want to tell anybody real quick?
Like I put on the thing, if you can message me. There's been a couple people message me.
Nice. Good.
And if you want to message me and talk, I'll give you my phone number and you can call me and talk.
I know he will. Again, that's on my Facebook page called There Is a Way Out. That's a group page. All you need to do is send me an invite. Right, Tom? You're not going to get flooded with all kinds of responses back from me. There's no commercial sent to you. There's no money involved. Nothing. You can just be a participant by looking at all the comments on there and feel good about. Yeah.
Most definitely, bro. Most definitely. I'd be proud to help anybody after, just by saying, hey, you can do it. Whatever. Whatever it takes for you to stay sober, that'd be good for me.
Hang on real quick, Tom. And thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on.
You're welcome.
Hang on.
My pleasure.
Oh, hang on real quick, buddy. Such a cool guy. Again, this is how my podcast works. Just another great guest, another great story. Again, for anyone who's feeling the pain, the anguish, yourself or friends or neighbors, they're spiraling out of control. All I ask is just give a couple of my podcasts a chance to listen to. And remember, truly remember, there is a way out.